Hello friends and welcome to Season 3 of the Endhits Records podcast. This is your host, Oise Ronsberger. This season we will talk in depth about B-Well's debut album, The Weight and the Cost. This is our first episode and today we will talk to singer Brian McTernan. Not only was he the frontman of the legendary hardcore band Battery, but he also is one of the most respected producers in the independent music world. He worked with all your favorite bands, including Hot Water Music, Thrice, Circa Survive, and Turnstile. Today he lives with his family in Baltimore. Hey, Brian. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm great. How are you?
Not too bad. So as I told you, Brian, from now on, we will do a podcast series about every record that we're going to put out on Endhits. And I wanted to talk about the Be Well with you today. And before we get into Be Well, I wanted to pedal back just a little bit.
Sure.
So you're obviously a very well-known, successful producer. And from, let's say, around, you know, 99, 2000 till 2010, it seems like you produced every record.
Yeah, a lot of them.
A lot of the records in my collection and a lot of people that will listen to this podcast, their collection, I'm sure if they, you know, just grab a stack, there's a big chance that you produce those records.
Yeah.
And please correct me if I'm wrong here. It seemed like around 2010, 11-ish, you started to work less. Is that correct? And what was the reason for that?
Let's see. I'm trying to think of when I took a break from the studio. Well, one, my daughter was born in 2009, I think. No, 2007. my brain's not working very well. And that definitely was a change of pace. A couple things happened. I had gone from the basement studio to my first professional space to slowly the studio had evolved and evolved and evolved. And then in about 2005, kind of when that was really the peak for me, I bought a huge building in downtown Baltimore and built a big, beautiful studio with a loft where the bands lived and just a really fantastic big place. And that was amazing. And it was, I was doing a lot of great records and bands would live there while they were recording and budgets were really good. And then, and all my clients always paid me and everything was fine. And then when the financial crisis happened, it was my daughter had just been born and the economy was crashing, and all of a sudden budgets just tanked, and two, labels stopped paying, which had never really happened to me before. And it became very, very stressful. And initially when the budgets were good, I would have my studio and I had an assistant and I had a cleaning company and a linen company and all of these things. And slowly as the budgets came down and down and down, all of a sudden, my wife and I are there cleaning toilets and making beds and cleaning up after bands. And I was having to do all my own editing. And basically I just got to the point where I was so overwhelmed, and I just kind of the joy of it all had started to fade a bit. And I want to say maybe 2012, I ended up deciding to sell the building because I felt maybe one of the reasons I had a lot of overhead, and I thought that maybe one of the reasons that I was feeling so much pressure was all of that overhead. And so I ended up selling the building, which worked out really well because it was like in a nice area and I had renovated it really nicely.
So there's a nice area in Baltimore.
Oh yeah. Baltimore's beautiful. It's amazing. You come to my house and
it's been a while since I've been there, but
well, you know what's funny about that is when I was a kid growing up, I hated Baltimore. I literally, like, every time I came up here, the shows were really rough and like the clubs were all in really bad neighborhoods. And, you know, I thought it was like an awful place. And then my wife got a job up here. And she started saying to me, you know what? It's really cool. And people are really like funky and weird. And there's lots of cool restaurants. So initially, we bought a house as an investment because real estate prices are really cheap here. And Matt Smith from Strike Anywhere had been telling me over and over, dude, you should move to Baltimore. You should move to Baltimore. And we bought a house that we were going to like, love restoring houses. That's like a kind of like something I love to do, which will tie into the other story I was telling. But we bought this house and we were originally going to like fix it up and sell it. And then when I was coming up to work on it, I just like loved my neighbors and I loved the restaurants and I loved the people. And we just decided to instead move into that house and we sold our other house instead. And now we're lifelong Baltimore. But so anyway, I ended up selling the studio and I moved into a studio space with a couple other producers. And I thought, you know, maybe I just need a change. And that was a pretty good year. And I did a bunch of records that I was really stoked on. But I also like, it's probably hard to conceptualize, but the era of like Pro Tools and like up until around that time, I would never have a band come to the studio that couldn't play. You know what I mean? And all of these younger bands like couldn't play, and like not all of them, but like bands were showing up without their records being written and they'd want me to write the records for them. And then they couldn't play their instruments. So they want everything fixed in the computer. And to me, that just didn't feel like magic. It felt like data entry and like computer work rather than like something creative. And I honestly just got to the point where I wasn't happy and I almost felt like it's not fair to the bands to be doing it when my heart isn't 100% in it. So I decided to take a break and I ended up, I think it was maybe in like 2014, the last record I did before I closed that studio was Turnstile Nonstop Feeling, which is, I love those guys. So, I mean, if every band was like them, it would be great. But that
was, and they're great players too, right?
Oh, it's so good. And the best guys, like lifelong friends. But those records were really few and far between. You know, those records where you're just like, fuck, man, this feels so special. And I love these people. And we have this great connection. And I needed a change. So I ended up getting a job at a construction company as like a project manager, because I always built all my studios and I was like renovating houses and I just knew a ton about construction and things like that. And I have that, like the same thing you have, that like entrepreneurial, scrappy, hardcore kid hustle thing going on, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So I go there, and originally I'm just like this guy driving around, like checking on jobs. And within 6 months, they had me like running the company, and I was the COO of this big construction company all of a sudden. And it was fun for a little while. You know, it was like producing records is so, it's such a weight to carry in that I feel like, you know, what people give up to be in a band and the sacrifices they make in their life. Like, I always just felt like I need to put 150% into every moment of every day. And doing that for 25 years, you get to a point where that's just a lot, you know? So to all of a sudden have like, oh, all I have to do is like return my emails and call people back and show up and be honest. And, you know, it was kind of a nice change of pace at first.
Did you at that point have any creative outlet? Because if you look at the timeline, there were a few battery shows in there, right? 2012, RevFest and stuff.
So like that. This all happened after RevFest. So right after RevFest was when I sold the building. And then I was in the other space. And I think it was like 2013 when I took this other job and just wasn't doing music at all. I mean, I was doing some mixing for things and doing some songwriting with people, but I really just, it was kind of like a hard stop. And at first it was fun, you know this, but like going from doing something that was so incredibly meaningful, you know, to doing something that just didn't matter, and working like the people I worked with, I didn't like or respect. And then as soon as kind of the like, oh, I'm making a shitload of money and it's, you know, I don't have all this pressure all the time. Once that, the thrill of that kind of wore off, all of a sudden I realized like, I don't know, it's kind of hard to explain, but like
something's missing there.
Something was definitely missing. And like, I had kind of like struggled like my whole life kind of with like some mental health type stuff. And when I was making records, I just poured all of that into that, you know, like instead of turning it in on myself, I took all of that energy that could have been like bad, negative and bad and self-destructive. And I poured it into the records. And I mean, I like the intensity with which I kind of approached making records, I think, you know, you can hear it. You will never walk out of here wondering whether I cared. You know what I mean? Yeah. And also you always had like things on the horizon. Oh, this record's coming up, or this tour's coming up, or like, and then I was around, not all the time, but around amazing people and like eating lunch together. And then the next thing I know, I'm driving around in a work truck by myself, hours a day, with nothing on the horizon in my life. And all of a sudden, like all of that energy that I used to pour kind of into something positive in my life turned kind of inside. I don't think I've ever been as like as dark of a place as I ended up. All of that passion became kind of like internalized like depression, and I started drinking too much, and I was super kind of like isolated from my friends and like even my family. I would come home and just like could hardly kind of communicate with anyone. And I really had no idea whatsoever. Like, I spent my whole life surrounded by people, and then all of a sudden I'm alone all day. You know what I mean? Driving around with no one to like share anything with and nobody to kind of like pour that into. And then when we ended up doing the Battery tour, when we came back and played Sound of Revolution, do you know what year that was?
2017? 17, I think, because you also played like another festival in the DC area at the same time.
Yes, Damaged City. So yeah. I just had no, I was so numb to like everything in the world. I just kind of shut everything off. I wasn't connected with, you know, like Schleibom. There was a time when we would talk like five times a day, and then weeks and weeks would go on when I wouldn't talk to anybody. And I was really in a pretty scary place, like maybe the worst place I'd ever been in. And then when we went to do the Battery stuff, it was like this awakening. It was kind of like, oh my God, I miss so much, not just like playing and having kids mosh, but just having something to think about and look forward to, having things on the horizon, having reasons to like be talking to people like you and Schleibaum and Dan and the people that love me and care about me. And I just realized that like, I'm just not the kind of person that can work some meaningless job that just for a paycheck. And then like, I realized like, I'm not that person. And we did the One Battery song. I started writing just a ton of songs, and I kind of maybe thought at first that it would be Battery, like, and then Ken really didn't like any of it. But like other people loved it. And a couple things came of it. One, I didn't really process where I was at in my life as a bad place. I had just numbed it all to the point where I just kind of like was on autopilot and would not even allow myself to process what I was feeling. But I was writing all these songs and writing all these lyrics, and you can't hide it there, right? Like, I'm just thinking nothing of it. And then I'm sending songs to like friends of mine. And one day I got a call from my friend, and he was like, dude, are you okay? Like, like, this shit is like pretty dark. And like, I think that there's something about hardcore for me where like in life, I am like the most private person, right? Like I'm not like a big Facebook sharer. For some reason, when I sit down with music, the way that it makes me feel, like the most truest things of myself come out. And all of a sudden I was looking at this body of work and I was thinking, man, this isn't who I am. And I just basically, my wife and I talked, and we basically decided that like I needed to do something that made me happy with my life. Like I couldn't do this anymore. And I decided to quit that job and just to do music. And it was the best thing I ever did. And they were total fucking assholes about it. But basically, like what I did is I quit and I started doing music again. And I already had all these Be Well songs that Mike and I had been working. I didn't have all of it, but Mike and I had been demoing some of this stuff. And then the big break for us was when Aaron Dahlbeck moved to Maryland. Because, I mean, you know, like for me, it's hard to find band members because I don't want to say I'm a musicianship snob, but I have pretty high standards. And finding people that are super good, but also like Aaron Dahlbeck is a superhuman in my mind as a musician and a friend, and so is Schleibaum. So then it was like, wait, this might work. These fucking dudes are awesome. And and then we struggled to find a drummer, and I had almost given up. And at the end of, right when we got home from the last Battery tour, we got an email from Shane, who was the drummer in Fairweather. Do you know Fairweather?
Oh yeah, they were on EBR too. Alaska, yep, yeah. Alaska was the record called, right?
Yep, yeah. So I did a Fairweather record, If They Move, Kill Them. Mm-hmm. And Shane, who was like a friend of ours and was the drummer of Fairweather and was fucking awesome, sent us an email like, hey, I got these demos I'd love to try out. And I was just like, oh yes, this is fucking sweet. And we played, and literally like 10 seconds into playing together, it was like, this is it. This is the band. So anyway, the arc is, yes, there was a big disappearing moment in my musical career where I kind of timed out. And I'm back.
but you say you started writing. Did you record all the instruments yourself at home, demo everything? Are you a drummer? Are you a guitar player?
No. So I didn't play any of the drums. So we were jamming with, do you know Majority Rule?
Oh, yeah.
We were we did the first batch of demos with Pat, the drummer from Jordy Rule, and he was fucking great. But then he moved to California. So then we jammed with a couple other people, and then you probably don't know this, but we recorded the whole record with the drummer from Darkest Hour playing. And we finished the whole record, and I was like, this is like too perfect. We scrapped that whole version of the record with the drummer from Darkest Hour because it was just not punk. You know what I mean? It was like, it wasn't, I mean, not punk, but it just didn't feel hardcore. Like it didn't, it was too perfect and precise. Like he read it all off sheet music and it was really impressive. It just wasn't the record that I had in my head.
So funny enough, when Delbecq approached me and told me about the band and who's in the band, I was like, this is amazing. This is great. And he started playing me, you know, first snippets and everything. It wasn't as hardcore as I thought it's going to be. And it had nothing to do with the musicianship. But I think the record is so much, you know, I don't know, more eclectic, more sophisticated than, let's say, a Battery record. Like, in your head, like, is it a hardcore record in your head? Or do you realize that it's very broader spectrum of?
Well, so, I mean, it just, I guess it's funny because I was having this exact conversation with my daughter because she went on YouTube and read the comments and somebody was like, why are these guys saying they're a hardcore band? This doesn't sound like hardcore. And she's like, Dad, like this guy is saying you're not hardcore, but you're saying you're hardcore. My thing is this. I am a hardcore kid. That is my life. I have never known anything except being that. And, you know, and to me, hardcore is started with Soulside and Embrace and Right to Spring and 7 Seconds and evolved into Inside Out and Quicksand. I mean, to me, that's all hardcore. And it's not hardcore in the box that Battery or Better Than 1,000 per se is. Mm-hmm. But to me, hardcore is like, it's an energy and it's a kind of a full way of life in a way, you know, and not a sound. I know that people might not think Quicksand is hardcore, but to me they were, you know what I mean? Like, so I think Be Well is a hardcore band in the same way that I think that like 7 Seconds, Inside Out, and even to me, like Embrace and Rites of Spring to me are hardcore. Dag Nasty, I mean, is that not hardcore? You know, that's pretty fucking eclectic. But I don't think it needs to be like Youth Crew or Stomp Mosh in order to be a hardcore record. And I feel like people can challenge that all they want, but like hardcore is, you know, I think it's safe to say at this point, like, is my life. I mean, I have just contributed to it and it's contributed to who I am as a person. It's since my earliest memories. Like my brother and I started going to shows when I was 10 or 11 years old. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I was just talking to Toby Morris and I met him when I was in 12 years old at a Dag Nasty show. And we're friends to this day. And so it's like, is H2O a hardcore band? They don't sound anything like Knocked Loose. You know what I mean? But to me, it's like, it's the coolest thing about a hardcore is that, you know, Turning Point doesn't sound anything like Resurrection, but they were both hardcore bands in that same era. And to me, like, I wanted to make a record that had like the emotional intensity of a hardcore record, the feel of like a record where you feel like an honesty and an integrity to it that is like that you just don't find in like rock music. I feel like, I mean, I like to me, what has kept me so in love and passionate about hardcore in general is that I always felt like the records helped me identify, the lyrics were the words for things I was feeling but could never quite understand about myself. You know what I mean? And to me, that's as big of a part of like what hardcore is as like technically the way that it sounds. Mm-hmm. I mean, so yes, so
it is a hardcore record.
To me, it's a hardcore record. And to me, I don't really care what people think about, like, you know, part of being hardcore is like, we're making the rules for what we're doing. And like, it being a hardcore band makes me love it even more, you know? And it's funny because it's like this like evolution of like, you know, Battery started when I was in 14 years old. We recorded the demo. And then you go through this era where like, and it happens to a lot of people. Oh, I want to do rock. Oh, I want to, you know, like I can really play now. I want to do this. I want to do that. I mean, I'll tell you what, man, nothing in the world makes me feel as alive as fucking playing hardcore music. Nothing, nothing, nothing in the world makes me feel more connected to people than getting on stage or going seeing my friends' bands play. It just like gives me faith in humanity. And it's why doing this music pulled me out of literally like the darkest place I've ever known in my entire life. And I'm like so grateful for the people and the opportunity. And it's also just like, to me, hardcore is like the fact that Aaron Dalbeck and I met at an Ashes Lifetime show in 1993 and still talk every day. You know what I mean? Like, it's just amazing. It's like this incredible sense of community, and I love it. I will never be in another band that is not a hardcore band. So
does your daughter agree now too?
She thinks it's funny, and I told her to never read the comments ever again.
Oh, YouTube comments are the worst. You cannot
do that. But she doesn't know that, so she's kind of like, what the hell is going on? This guy's saying you're not hardcore. I'm like, hey, man, I got the pictures to prove it.
So when you write, are you a person that listens to a lot of music at that point? Or is it like literally, like, are you isolating yourself and just let it pour out?
Well, I've been listening to a lot of music. And when I was doing the construction thing, I was listening to a lot of music. When I was producing records, I would go through phases of listening to music. But when you're in the studio 12 hours a day, 6 or 7 days a week, it's really hard to want to like get in the car and blast some fucking Turning Point. You know what I mean?
Yeah. When you're a cook, you don't want to cook at home, right?
Not always. And then I missed that. So, I mean, now I've been listening to a ton of music, and I've never like tried to emulate other people's writing styles or, like, in Battery, I didn't write any of the music. Ken wrote all the music. So it was like, I just wasn't a part of that. I wrote a lot of the lyrics. But then in Ashes and Milltown, I always just wanted to write something that like felt like something I hadn't heard before, rather than having it be like something that I had. With Be Well, I need to get back to doing it, but I kind of made this commitment to myself to try and do something creative every single day. And so every day I would sit down at the computer, like with my guitar, and I would write riff ideas. And then I would like catalog them. And I decided that I was like, this might sound weird, but the best stuff is pretty simple a lot of times, right? Mm-hmm. And like, you think about like these super simple riffs, and when you're a musician, sometimes you play it, it seems too simple to you, and you move on from something that could be really great just because it doesn't feel, when you're playing it, it doesn't feel substantial enough. Mm-hmm. So what I did when I was starting to write this stuff was I just decided that I wasn't going to like worry about any of that at the time. that I was just going to sit down and try and write something every day. So I would write and play until I felt like I had come across something that I loved. I would lay it down, and then I wouldn't even go back to listen to any of those ideas until like a couple weeks had passed. And then I would go back and I would listen to it while I wasn't playing and kind of just improvise vocal melodies over it. And it was really cool because a lot of things that I ended up having really cool vocal ideas for were like guitar riffs that in and of themselves, I wouldn't have been like, oh, this is amazing. I want to bring this to the band. Mm-hmm. It just became kind of like a really awesome, like kind of like bed for what I wanted to do vocally. And I'm like a real vocal lyric and vocal driven person. So where Battery was like very guitar riff driven, I often had a really hard time putting vocals to those songs. These songs are really like vocally driven because of kind of the approach to how I wrote them. And it was a lot easier to come up with like cool vocal patterns and melodies and things like that.
Mm. I mean, there's a big difference between writing a song and writing a piece of music, if you know what I mean. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Like
if you look at metal, they write music, but is it really a great song? That's a big question mark a lot of times, right?
Well, I really love like well-written songs. So I kind of wanted, like, if you strip the Be Well songs down to just like the chords and the melodies, they're kind of put together not that differently than like an acoustic song. Like the chords move much more like a singer-songwriter style movement than like a guitar riff band, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. But that's always like that cliche, but it's true. Like if it doesn't work on acoustic guitar, it doesn't work at all, no matter what you put on top of it, right?
The funny thing about that is, yes, I totally agree. Like when I'd have bands in the studio, we would always strip it down to like, hey, pre-production is us in the control room with acoustic guitars. Because that's where you can really feel like, oh, it feels like the chord should go here, or this part is the bridge, but it feels like it should be the chorus. Like when you're hearing it all loud and with all the leads and all the stuff, it's sometimes hard to kind of like process that, where I feel like you strip it way back down and then get the movement of the chords right and then build the song back up on top of them. The interesting thing about it is it ends up being that you can put even cooler guitar leads over top of it when you do it that way, because the chords give the melody a place to go. It's not a box. You know what I mean? It's like it moves in a way where it gives you more interesting options with the guitar leads and the melody.
In the process of recording the Be Well record, you are producing it yourself. You are, you know, recording it yourself with some help. You're mixing it yourself.
I recorded it myself, and my friend Paul Levitt. Do you know who Paul Levitt is? He's a producer. He's like one of my best friends. He did like produce like All Time Low and a bunch of like pretty big like pop punky things. Mm-hmm. But he was kind of like my sounding board in that like we're really close, and I would send him things and he would say like, oh, try this, try that. So it was really nice to be able to have someone to kind of bounce that off of, because it's pretty hard to do a lot, you know, especially when the record took like was written and recorded over such a long period of time with like a lot of different people. Like some of the record is Andrew Black playing drums, and some of the record is our actual drummer Shane playing drums, and trying to tie that all in together so that it feels like a cohesive thing was a bit of a challenge.
Because you earlier talked about how intense it was for you, or how much you put yourself into producing a record and how much of you, you know, you poured into the recording. Like how hard was it for the other guys to put up with you in their process when you are the singer and the producer and they are your bandmates, but also you're producing them?
I mean, the good thing is these guys are everybody in the band. Like Shane and Peter were both in Fairweather and then they were in Olympia on EVR, and then Mike and Aaron, you know, have been in bands forever. I mean, one, I had made records as the producer for all of them already. So they, you know, you're signing on to being in a band with me, you kind of know what you're getting yourself into. But the thing is that when you have dudes that are all that good, like I actually, it's funny because instead of like a young band where you're trying to teach them to play tight and play well, I just want this shit to rock. You know what I mean? Like, like I don't want to like it to be perfect. I want to feel like this chord's a little ahead, or you know, I like the benefit of having these like super like experienced people involved is that it's just let them do their thing. They're fucking good. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
So we have a very like, it's funny actually, because like Battery, I love Ken. He's like a brother, right? But when we met, I was like a little kid and he was a super much older and much more experienced. And I don't want to say that we ever had like a bad band relationship, but it was not like, I don't know. It wasn't like when I was doing Ashes, we're all the same age and we're all like in the same place in life. And it was just a lot of fun. Battery at times was like, you know, Ken has his thing he wants to do. And you have Ken and I who are like two like real guys with distinct visions. And at times that could be hard, where Be Well is like, these dudes are just like, we're all kind of in the same place in life. We all have kids. We all want to do this for like the sole purpose of like missing the community of like being in a band and like love spending time together and have like a really funny group text chat. And I think that for these guys, like they're happy that like I am so driven and so motivated because they don't have to worry about anything except playing. You know what I mean? And so anyway, it's been like a really super positive thing. And I think that for Peter and Shane, who I had less experience with, I think they kind of were afraid that I was going to be more like when we recorded with Shane, like there was like a second batch of songs that like The Weight and the Cost, Tiny Little Pieces and Longing. We and Magic, we recorded with Shane playing drums, and he had built up in his head that I was going to be like this like psycho obsessive lunatic. Where I actually like don't, I like wanted it to rock a little, and I want it. He'd be like, oh, I played the kick pattern a little different in the first chorus versus the second. And I'm like, oh, great. And he's like, wait, no, it's gotta be the same. And I'm like, no, dude, I want it to be like, you know, all hang out there. And I didn't want this like triggered, grid edited, auto-tuned, you know, there's not a copy and paste on the whole fucking record. I mean, we could have just recorded it to tape, you know? And I feel like a record that's like as personal and emotional, you have to take every opportunity to like get the feel in there. And when you have people that are good, the benefit of that is like you just let them do their thing and it's cool.
Did you, because you mentioned earlier, you've been struggling with mental health issues all your life. And if going through the lyrics, hopefully when people hear this podcast, they have the records in their hand as well, or pre-ordered it or whatever. Did you present the lyrics to everybody before, or did you include, you know, the lyrics with the demo that you sent to the other band guys? And do you know what their reaction was? Do you remember?
No, I didn't ever like submit it to, I mean, as I would finish the vocals, I would always send it to the guys. I know that they, I know that like they love like having a real connection to the lyrics. Like when Shane told me when he heard Confessional, when he heard the lyrics, he, that was like it. He wanted to be in the band. So to me, that makes me happy because I, to me, like the lyrics are such a huge part of it. And I work really hard on them and like really did try and not hold anything back. I mean, there are times where I'm like, gosh, did I really want to say that to the world? But I also feel like it's important. Like to me, people before me that didn't hold back and were vulnerable and really revealed their true selves to the world through their music. I mean, I can't even imagine what my life would be like if people before me hadn't done that. So to me, I just didn't hold anything back. And I hadn't really thought about it that much. And it's interesting actually, because when the song, The Weight and the Cost, that's kind of what that song is about. Like, so we played our second show was the first show that Dan from EVR came out to. And he called me, my daughter was there. And Dan called me a couple days after and we were talking and he was like, I hope this isn't weird, but like, man, that must be really hard to sing these lyrics in front of your daughter, right? And it is. And then I ended up writing the song, The Weight and the Cost is basically about that, which is like, I feel like if I don't share this with her, that is such a true part of like who I am as a person, that she'll never actually know me. You know what I mean? Like, I am not this like perfect, super dad, awesome, easygoing, coaching the softball team kind of guy. Like, I'm a fucking musician and I'm a mess and my head is in a million different places and I have aspirations of my own that aren't just parenting, but I also want to be an awesome dad. And kind of like this journey of like self-realization has been hard. I mean, when I was miserable and numbing myself into submission and just not allowing myself to feel anything was kind of easier than waking up and going, this is what's actually going on inside, buried beneath all of this other shit. And I'm just like super grateful that like I have a group of band dudes that like appreciate that and like are like the fact that they're such good dudes and they're so good and we all come from kind of the same musical background in some way and same kind of like we're all in a similar place in life. I feel like it's given me the confidence to like say things that I really needed to say that I probably would not have otherwise.
Is there anybody where you think it would be hard for them to see the record, read the lyrics, besides your daughter or your wife or anybody else in your family? Like, are you worried about sharing those things with somebody?
No, I feel like part of the reason that I was so depressed was, one, when I was recording bands and like nonstop, and I was pouring like my heart and soul into their records, I also had this feeling that like I was still depressed. You know what I mean? I still had a lot of like that shit going on. And I felt like I couldn't let people know because I always felt like who wants some like depressed, messed up person in charge of making their record? Like, I know that doesn't seem rational as I say it now, but I felt like bands wouldn't respect me and wouldn't want to entrust me to something so important if they knew how fucked up I was, right?
Mm-hmm. But then that's probably a wrong assumption, because what's the guy's name? Ross Robinson? Hasn't he built his career on exactly that?
I don't know. But it's definitely the wrong assumption in that like some of my clients, or whatever you would want to call them, are just the most amazing people in the world. And like, had I been willing to kind of like share more of myself with them, I think we would be even closer. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So instead, people are, you know, I would be moody in the studio or kind of like erratic in some way. And people wouldn't, because I wasn't actually telling them what was going on, they wouldn't know what that was about, you know? And then when I wasn't in the studio anymore, I had realized I built a lifetime of relationships with people that didn't really know who I was, that had this whole part of myself that they were not aware that it existed. And I think that there's going to be people that hear this record and feel like, oh, that's kind of weird. And then I think there's what, you know, and then there's going to be people that I'm a million times closer to because now they know me for real. You know, they know the true me. I think about all the time, one of the last summer when I was writing a bunch of this, the Be Well stuff, actually, Strength for Breath in particular, I was in the process of remixing Hot Water Music Caution. Mm-hmm. And I kept listening to the lyrics and I kept feeling like, my God, these are so heartfelt and revealing. I feel so much closer to these guys as people because of how honest and incredible this record is, right? And like, I'm not listening to I'm All Right For Now, But I Haven't Been, and thinking, oh, Chris Waller's a shithead. You know what I mean? I'm thinking, fuck, man, this dude I love and respect so much is like dealing with so much pain that's similar to me, you know? And it's like, how come I never talked to him about it? Like, I never said to him, like, hey, dude, you know what, man? I feel that same way. You know what I mean?
I do have a feeling, though, that as men, that's something that's just on the table since a few years now. When you probably recorded the music, or even 10 years ago, it wasn't even something that would have been socially, you know, acceptable or not frowned upon. I think the times have changed in that regard, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, and I mean, my thing is like, this is the most true and revealing snapshot of where I was in life that you could ever get. And I think for every person that is like, oh shit, he's not singing about the kids in the scene. And, you know, there's going to be somebody that feels like, fuck, man, I feel exactly like that, you know? Mm-hmm. And am I afraid? Yeah. Like, it doesn't make me happy that I was that sad. You know, it doesn't bring me joy. It's not a put on, but it was the truth. And I mean, it was where I was at in my life. And like, if you take that kind of realness and authenticity out of it, I mean, like, that is the thing that's always drawn me to music. And that's what makes me, like, you know, a record like Rites of Spring record, when I was a kid, I think of like a lyric, like, there's a Rites of Spring lyric that's caught at a distance from myself and there was no one there to know. Mm-hmm. I thought of those words, you know, sitting alone at a bus, waiting, you know, trying to process what I'm feeling. How come I'm like surrounded by all of these people and still feel so isolated in the world? And I would think about those words and think like, what if he had been afraid to reveal his true self? Mm-hmm. What if he had been worried about like what people were going to think? Like, I might have never had that thing that I've cherished, you know, that record I've cherished for almost 30 years now. And it's because it was so true and so revealing, and he didn't hold back at all. And he just put it all out there and didn't worry about it. And that's kind of like, I'm not comparing what we've done to Rites of Spring. I'm just saying I put on paper exactly how I felt. And I'm at a place in my life where if there's somebody that's going to read that and not understand or not care about me anymore or not want to, you know, or be disappointed, then I just can't have people like that in my life anyway. And it's fine. You know what I mean?
Do you think, as the singer of Be Well, you are starting to play life now? Do you think you can reinvent yourself a little bit? And the reason why I'm asking this is when you perform with Battery, it's obviously some of those songs are like over 20 years old at this point, right? And yeah, a lot of people associate those songs with their youth. It's a nostalgic trip to some extent, if you know what I mean. Right. It's in the present, but the reason why people are drawn to it is maybe nostalgic. And I also think that people probably have a different image of you, because people are still looking at those records and there's a picture of you on it when you were 20 years old.
Right.
And the things and the values you have, some might be the same, some might have changed. Like, but people have certain expectations about the singer of Battery, if you know what I mean. Is performing with Free Will like kind of breaking free from people's expectations?
Be Well, I think, is probably a better fit for me, like, in terms of like where I'm at in my life. Like, one of the reasons that I wanted to do something new and not just have this be a new Battery record is for those exact reasons, which is I wanted to write a record that felt like it was like, until the end, Battery, like that record is so such a perfect snapshot of like where my head and heart were when I was that age, you know? Mm-hmm. And like in the same sense that it was now, some of that stuff, you know, it's fun to do for a nostalgic reason, but I'm not like passionate about like the scene in the same way that I was when I was like a young man, it like building the scene, you know? And I think that kind of like the lyrical content of Be Well and just the eclectic style to how it is makes performing like a like much easier to do than like, I don't know, getting up on stage and like jumping around and, you know, you get to a point where it just doesn't feel totally right anymore. You know what I mean? Like the Battery H2O tour, I was like, that was one of the best experiences of my life, hands down. The shows were amazing. I had a ton of fun. And I also felt like I might not ever need to do this again, you know, like, I want to, like, Be Well is decidedly new. Like, I want to create, I want to have, like, in the same way that, like, you know, go back to the gym when I was 22 and mad that kids were fighting at shows, connected with people in that way. I think that there's going to be, like, a lot of people that are parents and will hear some of these lyrics and totally identify, and also young people who have like a hard time understanding their parents and where they are in life will be able to connect with this stuff. And like, it doesn't feel like it's such a reflection of where I'm at in life. It doesn't feel like I'm pretending, you know, where there's only so many times that like, you know, can get up and play 20 some year old songs where you start to feel like, you know, this has been done and doesn't need to keep being done.
Absolutely. I mean, when was the last time you thought about people dancing too hard and telling them to go back to the gym, right?
I know. Well, the funny thing about that, you say that, is we stopped playing that song on the last tour because there aren't fights at shows anymore. People don't understand what that song is about now because they're like, wait, what do you mean? Like, shows aren't violent like they were when I was a kid.
Yeah, it's absolutely pointless.
I still love Battery. And I would be thrilled to do a Battery show here or a Battery show there. And like some of my favorite people in the entire world, I made friendships I made through doing Battery and touring with Battery. And in no way am I saying like, I'm done with it. I just, it's not the outlet that I needed. And it's like a special occasion thing where Be Well is like a lifestyle and like something that I can like pour myself into on a daily basis. And also something that like there's room for me to kind of contribute musically where there wasn't in Battery. And that gives you, you know, it's just a kind of a different thing.
I mean, it's also a more honest approach. Like, more honest, I don't know if that's the right word. I don't want to put anybody down, but it's very honest in terms of you don't try, you know, you're not trying to take Battery and, you know, the fans it has and everything and put something new that's not Battery, you know, out under the name just because it would be easier.
Right.
You take the harder route, which is starting something completely new.
It would have been a lot easier to do a new Battery record or do a new hardcore band that's like, you know, songs are about like the scene and the kids and things like that. That would be an easier, quick path. But I do think that Be Well, I think is going to connect. I really think that it's going to connect with people in like it a different way. And I'm like, the thing that I really love, like, is that everybody involved, like you and Dan and Aaron and all, everybody's coming at it from the same place, which is like a kind of a mutual love and respect. And it's so cool for me. I don't know if Dan mentioned you, but Norm from Texas is the reason is going to write the bio.
Oh, amazing.
And yeah. And it's just like, oh my God, it's like all of these awesome reasons to be in touch with people that make me so happy, you know?
I mean, John Yates did the layout. Like when I heard that, I freaked out and I was like, because I had all those records that he put out, all those weird 7 inches that he put out on his label and the layouts he did, you know, for all those bands.
He was amazing. And it was like a dream. So the funny thing about that is that like, I stopped writing music of my own in 1999. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Like I literally between 1999 and Be Well, I wrote with bands and collaborated on things, but I didn't write any of my own music. Like, and so the funny thing is all these people are like, oh wow, it's like this throwback, like late 90s kind of Rev, Jade Tree kind of vibe. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, that's when I stopped writing music. I'm not trying to like go back and reconnect with, I'm like, that's just like, it's like, I was like almost in a cryogenic chamber, you know what I mean? And it came out and that's just like what I do. And the funny thing is it's like, that's why I wanted John Yates to do the art. Like, that's just what I like. I mean, like, I loved that era of music. I loved like the later Rev stuff and Jade Tree stuff and the layouts and the art and the production and all of that. Like in my dream world, the Be Well record would kind of have been able to come out now and be fresh and also come out in like 2000 and be like current.
Current. I think it is actually. I think it's not one of those records that's going to be stuck in a specific time frame.
I think.
It's kind of like it has a classic approach without being, you know,
part of that is like, I like think a big part, I think of so many of the records that I produced that people like still love, I realize are were tracked without a bunch of nonsense, like without a bunch of drum triggers and auto tune and all. And then you kind of realize it's kind of like cooking. Like you just take the best ingredients and like do it with love. And that's like way better. Like if you go and buy like pasta sauce, spaghetti sauce at the store, there's 50,000 ingredients and it tastes like garbage. And you go to the best restaurant and it's like tomatoes, olive oil, basil, and garlic, and that's it. And you're like, how the fuck is this so good when it's so fucking simple? And honestly, most of the records I've done that are like the best, that's kind of the approach, which is like, we got the good shit. Let's just showcase the good shit. And so anyway, I do think that like when the performances are good, the sounds are natural, and the content of the lyrics is authentic, records in general seem to stand the test of time.
I think that's actually a perfect place for the two of us to wrap it up. This was amazing. So this is your second podcast. Toby was your first, you said?
Toby was my first, and it came out today.
I'm going to check it out.
I can't listen to it because it makes me too self-conscious.
Are you going to listen to this one when it comes out?
Maybe I will by that time.
It's going to be like, you know, you give it a few years and then you can listen to it and analyze it. Brian, thank you very much. I'm really looking forward to put the record out.
Oh, my God.
Really glad how all those things came together.
Yes, I'm thrilled. So, and then you got to connect with the EVR people in Portland.
I should, actually. But nobody's going to be in the office at the moment.
Not right now. By the way, I just want to, I feel like you and I should have known each other our whole life.
You know, we have the same friends because I texted Robert, who's in Boys It's Fire, you know, the German member who used to live with Matt Smith and Shelley.
Oh, yeah.
And he says hi to you and Nino.
I love him, yes.
So, and all those people, like we have a million friends and it's crazy we never officially ran to each other. Obviously, I saw Battery play back in the day, but that was, you know, it's actually insane. There's a few people out there where I'm like, I should have met those people years ago.
I know. I feel totally like that. And then it's like, Dan is like, I love Dan. Like, so EVR was the first label to ever hire me as a label to do a record ever. Like I had done records before that, but they were always like Texas Is the Reason. When they came in, they didn't come in on Revelation.
They just wanted to demo. Yeah.
Yeah, and then it turned into the record where I then went to the first Texas Is the Reason show at Steve Reddy from EVR's apartment. And Steve was like, oh, you recorded that record? I'll send you some bands. And I mean, it's just so cool how it's like, you know, all of these things are all kind of like happening in a togetherness kind of way. So anyway, but thank you so much. And you have to thank Andre for me as well. That he's just killed it. He did such a good job.
Awesome. He's going to be so stoked. He was so happy to work on the record.
Yeah.
Because he met you guys and Ken and your brother like ages ago. Obviously, John Yates is like one of his huge heroes as a designer. How can John Yates not be your hero? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it he feels the same way. He's just so stoked to work on the project.
Yay. All right, cool. Well, I'm going to torture Marco right now and just see where he's at with things.
Perfect. Thank you so much for this, and I'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much for listening to the End Hits podcast. If you enjoyed this episode as much as we did, please send us feedback, share it with your friends, subscribe to the podcast, or give us a review. Stay safe and take care.